11, 10, 9. We have ignition sequence start. The engines are on. 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Welcome to the Social Media Church Podcast, a place for conversation with church leaders about social media, web trends, and anything else our host wants to talk about. Neil Smith is the Vice President of Social Media and Innovation at Denham & Company, lives in Texas, loves the Spurs, and exploring the world with his family. Jay Cranda is the online pastor at Saddleback Church, lives in California, loves the Lakers and drinking black cold brew coffee, and once could do a heel flip. To engage with the show, use the hashtag SMC Podcast. Let's join the show.
Okay, welcome to the Social Media Church Podcast. My name is Jay. I'm without my co-host, Niels. But I got a friend here, Brian. Well, I'm like, wait. We've been talking for so long and my brain just... Brandon Lyons. Dude.
The homeless guy you just met outside.
Yeah, you are the most LA person that I... Like, when I think of LA, I think of you. And I am so... So a little bit about you. Brandon, you were on staff at Saddleback Church. That's how we really heavily got to know each other. We worked together. You did everything from, you worked on the peace team to the LA campus. You've done all sorts of things. Before that, you had a company that you were part of and doing, I mean, like, you did everything. And so anyways, so tell a little bit about who you are and what you're doing in LA with City Rising Church too. So I'll just let you give a little setup, but we'll talk about some fun stuff.
Cool. Yeah. So I'm from Southern California. I was actually one of those people who actually was raised at Saddleback Church. So I got to see all the cool stories that Rick talks about. I got to be a part of that, which is awesome. I headed off to the central coast of California in a little town called San Luis Obispo for college. Ended up doing wine and selling wine while I was out there. And I was doing that. I really came to my faith senior year of college. I started volunteering at the juvenile hall because it was really just like all of my old buddies that got busted. I finally got to hang out with them. And so I did that. I did a student ministry. And in that time, God called me out of that job and that career and to get trained in ministry, whatever that meant. So that led me to go into a seminary in Los Angeles called Talbot and taking an internship at Saddleback. And as of, I think, a year ago, roughly, I mean, it's funny because I left Saddleback September 16th and we had our first little gathering November 10th, but we've only recently gone public for City Rising. So that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
I'm in Echo Park. People often don't know where that's at, but pretty much if you drew a line from like downtown LA to Dodger Stadium, which is a mile and a half away, we are that area all around Dodger Stadium and our apartment is almost like a direct line, like a zip line between the two.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're in the city. We've only started doing public gatherings, I want to say 3-4 weeks ago, but we've been doing a lot of events and those kinds of things. So, yeah.
So go to City Rising Church, check that out, see what they're doing. I think, so, okay, this is what I want to talk about. So, Brandon, you and I have like, so we've been part of, very large, one of the largest churches. And now you're planting a church, you're in the process of this, you've helped, especially at Saddleback, you helped hundreds of churches, mm-hmm. time there, probably more than that. I mean, and so like, so the number one question I think people are figuring out is like, what is going to happen, with the next generation, the current, anybody under 35 and younger, like, is the church going to be relevant? And I think when I think about somebody who has thought about that is somebody, especially with LA, kind of, you have this, you know, post-Christian kind of culture that has already been going on and everything is going on. Like, you are one of those guys that you have a pulse on what's going on in culture with people. And I think people, I think you do, and you're going to downplay it or maybe you're going to upplay it. I don't know. but like you know what's going on. Now the hard part is there's a lot of learnings in that and figuring out what are some things that you would tell if you're talking to a church that maybe is 75 years old, their staff is getting older and they want to reach younger people, young families, like what are some of the stuff that you've learned with in the season of planting this new church? Like what are some of the stuff that you just stands out to you? And I want to just kind of talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to apologize to any noises. I have a toddler screaming in the room and apparently a wife who just started vacuuming. So I just want to make sure I could This is my life. This is city life right here. And you might hear peacocks because there are wild peacocks outside my window. Yeah, you know, the thing is, when I think of the church and where we're at, you know, it's different because, you know, I think people try to put millennials into one category, and there's certainly similarities within the millennial persona. But, you know, for someone who you're talking to in New England, right, like, this is no new battle to them. California, especially Los Angeles, and I think a lot of big cities, it's essentially a place where people from all over the country come to become famous. You come to make your gold. I always say that California, the gold rush started back in the 1840s or something like that, and it's just never started. People still come to the state to make their fortune, to get their education. You go up north for the tech boom. You come out here for the industry, Hollywood, for being a creative, music. This is where you come for all that stuff. So I think the thing isn't that people are, they're post-Christian in the mindset of, yeah, I did that. That was a part of my life. Or I knew somebody. I can't even tell you how many people that I interact with on a regular basis who have nothing to do with the church who sit, tell me something along the lines of, my grandfather was a pastor.
Mm.
Or my dad was a deacon. Or my mom, you know, and you hear that, or my uncle. So it's like they're only a generation or two generations removed. But the church is really struggling to answer that question of, why is this relevant? You know, I think that for the most part, the church still is used to being the dominant player in American culture. And we're just not anymore.
Mm.
You know, one of the things about living in Los Angeles is we dictate culture. We dictate culture for the entire country. We make all the commercials. We make all the movies. We make all the TV shows. They might be filmed somewhere else, but essentially, the brain trust is here, right? And so we start out here, and So one of the things with that we have to deal with in LA is there's so much negative communication about what church is, about what Christians are. And so one of the things I constantly talk to my people about, talk to my friends about, whatever that is, I talk about the idea that we got to change the narrative.
Yeah.
The narrative, if we allow culture to dictate our narrative, if we allow Hollywood to dictate our narrative, if we allow TV shows to dictate our narrative, and if we buy into it, right? If we look like what they expect, then they're just going to assume same old, same old. It's what I always thought it was. And it's what I always knew it would be. What's the point? And I think Christians are not used to that because how many years now have we been dominant? We've told the world what to do. We've told the country what to do. And that time's just gone.
Yeah.
So I think as a church in general, a general concept that I always try to talk about and I try to do, and I encourage especially like older guys, right? Because my dad's in ministry and I got a lot of older dudes who I look up to and I talk to about these things. My whole thing is you got to change the narrative. I mean, does that make sense?
Yeah. And part of this was spurring on, especially with social media, is we've had a couple of texts back and forth about different social media topics. And I've noticed on Facebook, you get engaged on topics. And I'm always like, I've always there's strategy there, I know. And there's also like just communication, because I think historically there's this point of view of, especially with politics and things going on, you kind of stay quiet and you just care for those who come. So you reach hurting people and they come inside your fold, you care for those individuals. But I don't know, like, is there, I've seen, and it might be an LA specific thing, and obviously you're leading out of your style too, but do you think that younger, I fit the millennial demographic, the timeline. And I know there's even, I was like reading something on The Ringer. They had this whole article around like old millennials are like great and young millennials are like Chance the Rapper, and even how there's these different segments within that. But
yeah,
is there like, do you find yourself that like, instead of hiding what we believe, and just voicing, because like, and at the end of the day, like, what is your thought process of just going at it on social media? Because you just share,
and
you force the conversation. Versus some people, I think churches tend to be like, oh, let's not talk about that until like they're part of our fold, deep inside. Like, is that very like tactful of you? Like, are you trying to like, no, people want to know what we believe, and we're going to share it. Do you think people like, what's your thought there?
Yeah, you know, I think this even comes like, especially we could talk about something like what is sometimes referred to as like the gay agenda or whatever. And I think a lot of the times, again, we've allowed somebody else to dictate our narrative, and we've fallen into the groove that they've tried to create by just going along with it. You know, I've been around the church long enough that I've heard that I've been serving in church for 14 years. And I've heard enough churches say, we want to be known by what we're for, not what we're against, what we're for, what we're not against. But then every political season, every time there's a vote, every time Miley Cyrus does something, or Lady Gaga, or whoever that person is in culture right now that they want to talk about, LeBron James, whoever it is, right?
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden it's, well, they're a terrible example. I would never want my children to do. It's like, this whole time,
really white. Like the voice you're doing.
It is white, right? Like Christian America is white. And I think we've lost touch with some of this idea of, like, I always think of like the woman at the well. And I keep going back to, and I've said this already, I think in this podcast, this idea of like, we're used to being dominant. And I've always felt that Christianity is better served being the freedom fighter than the oppressor.
Interesting. Yeah.
And when we're the freedom fighter, that's when you see a real contrast in who we are versus the world. When we are the oppressor, what we end up doing is we end up like in this battle of like, no, trust me. But why? Why trust you? Why should I? What have you done to earn my trust? And the answer for the most part is we haven't done a dang thing.
Yeah.
So a part of this for me is this intentional kind of idea of like, I'm going to step in when the woman caught in adultery is thrown at my feet. I'm going to make a lot of Christians pissed off, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Because I'd rather defend the person who's not saved and connect with them than worry about the soul who is saved.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's what's contagious. And so what I've found through that narrative and through being honest in my communication, I am very intentional with my Facebook. I don't even know necessarily like what I'm doing per se, but I am intentional in the sense that I say goofy stuff that I think is just funny. Because I just want people to know me as like, he's just a normal dude.
Yeah.
I say stuff that's very kind of like a juke move, right? Like I'll start off the thing that you think is sentimental, but I'm really making fun of myself. And like all that's to engage with me as a real authentic person. And what I've found is that when people in my community who know me, and by the way, nobody in my neighborhood is Christian.
Mm.
Nobody goes to church. One of my close friends in the neighborhood is a gay guy. He's been gay his whole life. Has nothing to do with church, wants something to do with church. But yet we house sit for him. When his dog needs to walk, we walk the dog. Me and him are planning to go do a wine trip, up to the Santa Barbara wine area. And we love each other, but we love each other based on what we have in common. And I think that my neighborhood has seen that I'm somebody who will step in when something's wrong. You know, like recently I saw somebody post something about Hillary doing this, that, and the other, and how could she, and my thing is always, nobody's going to trust you or trust your opinion until you're equally open to criticizing the person you support.
Mm.
You know, it's the same thing when you hear the pastor going, I'm the professional, I'm the best, I can figure it out, I know how to do it, just be like me. Nobody trusts that guy.
Yeah.
When you see somebody's brokenness and the ability to go, hey, this is hard and I'm struggling with this, will you step into it with me? I just think it creates an openness and an authenticity and a realness that people can connect with. And I think Christians need to ask a question and kind of like drive home that question of like, is this going to bring somebody closer to talking to me about Jesus,
yeah,
or them knowing about Jesus or knowing Jesus, or is this going to drive them further away? And in that, I think that creates opportunities for you to be really honest with culture.
Mm-hmm.
Like I have my 25-year-old neighbor. She's very pretty young lady, very talented, Princeton graduate, just got a leading role for a major motion picture. And she came to the decision at 24 that she wants to be celibate until she finds the person she wants to marry. And I think we have this idea of like, has hypersexualized, like everybody just wants to go out and have sex and the culture's fall. They're looking for people they can trust and ask about life.
Mm.
So is the voice you're going to create in your social platforms a voice that they can trust or not? And that's something they're going to ask and wrestle with.
Yeah, I think it's, and I think for those listening at churches, like, I think a lot about like the postings that we do. And like, I love the way that, and that's part of it is that I think you are you, and people that know you, you're consistent. I think there is kind of this false self thing with like just posting verses and so forth and thinking that that somehow is going to like transform somebody in the moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But people forget that without the Holy Spirit, Bible means nothing.
Yeah.
There's no authority in the Bible for a non-believer. So why do we expect them to? And I'd even point that to Jesus, right? Like when people are like, no Bible, but you have to give them the Bible. My thing is always going back to this idea of like, so how many times does Jesus quote the Bible in his sermons? Right? Like so rarely. Now, don't get me wrong. Like Jay, me and you went to the same seminary. There's a reason I pay a ton of money to go to Talbot, which is a really good conservative seminary. Yeah. I love the Bible. I believe in the Bible. I'm all on board with the Bible. Me and the Bible, I read it every day. I listen to it every day. But to the person who's not a believer, how can I communicate the messages and the story and the power of the Bible without them realizing that that's what I'm doing? And if I can do that, that's a big win.
Yeah. And it comes down to like, I mean, when you're thinking about your channels, I think thinking about, and I, you kind of have to develop, it feels like long-term, you develop a community out, like focus strategy, and then an internal, because you definitely need to be able to develop people down into whatever your core strategy is. But you also need to have a face outside to be able to represent, because there's some things you need to talk about and there's overlap, because it is funny, because it is getting more and more like with every passing moment, with every topic, if it's it deals with some, you know, Supreme Court ruling with homosexuality, or if it's like Black Lives Matter, or if it's whatever it is, there's like, you kind of look at the church, you're like, are you going to say anything? And I'm always curious with how that gets interpreted towards people in all demographics, because there is this stance that you don't say anything, but it's like, well, I have an opinion on that and I want to engage. And it's, and that's why I was curious about as you're planting this church and just being where you are, because there is a little bit, when you're at a church, you do represent that church.
Sure.
And so you have to be careful. I represent a church. And so I have to be careful, regardless of what I think and I have my own thoughts. I have to represent the history of that church, and being on staff, like I represent, so I have to respect that. And so there's a difference when you're planting your own church and you're in that season early on, it really forms out of the identity of you. So that's why I was really curious as I watch you. I'm watching every piece of that. And even when you've engaged, I've like texted you. I said, oh my God, I can't believe you said that, or you engage that. And it's just funny, because I think I'm curious how church plants will go now on, because we're so connected from different things. And we know, like, I know, you know, Northern Iraq is having this, there's this invading going on.
Yeah.
And so like, I know about things. We know about things so real time. It's crazy.
Yeah. Right.
Maybe it was easier to be quiet, but now I just feel like you need to. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you need to be able to speak into things when there's a voice that needs to speak into it, right? Like at this point, there's so much being said, in my opinion, about Trump and Clinton. There's so much being said about black lives versus blue lives. Is that a versus? What does it mean? That like, I don't feel the need to step into that mix, because there's a lot of people who are really smart and communicating it. And plus, at this point in the conversation, there's so much tied into those words,
yeah.
Right? It's no longer Black Lives Matters. Is this blah 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 movement started by these people? And you and I have actually got. I know I have. I think you got a chance to even meet Sean King as well, who's in charge of that whole thing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there's so few people who can say that. And so early on, there was things I wanted to say about it. But one of the things that I thought was super helpful with me was, early on when I start seeing these things coming down the line, right? Like I hear about these things that. And I just have to be honest with people. I'm a half Mexican, half white dude, which is so Los Angeles, but I look more white than I do Hispanic, right? And so I don't understand what it's like to be an African-American who's lived in Watts and had their family tell the stories of the riots and knows what it's like to police cars to flag them down just because they're black. You know, I remember talking to somebody not too long ago, and they said, let's just go do an experiment. You know, them and their buddies, they're in college, and the white guys in the dorms didn't get it. And so the black guys and the white guys got two different cars, and they literally drove at the same speed to the same neighborhood. And the black guys got pulled over. And it's just like, that's a reality. Now, do I need to speak into that? Do I need, no, but what I can do to help my people process through that in this mix right now, right? Because now it's too big. You say something, there's so many words that people just naturally jump to and they get angry and they get hurt.
Yeah.
And you start to pull people away from Jesus at that point. So what I do is on a case-by-case basis, I do my best to engage with African-Americans who have experienced that. And I think pastors want to do that, but I think it's hard for older guys sometimes to go to a younger guy and ask them and just trust that what they've experienced, whether it's 100% accurate, which we know it to not be, because none of how we remember anything is 100% accurate, but to still be able to sit with them in their pain and be broken with them in that they experienced something. That's how they remember it, right? And so, yeah, I think there's things that you need to be able to step into and speak to and be willing to call out culture like, hey, why are we not saying something about this? But in the wake of another African-American dying at the hands of a police officer, are we being a bully and pointing to that research that came out by that Harvard professor showing that this percentages are actually here, statistics show this?
Yeah.
Okay, does that make me a bully? Or does that make me someone who's comforting the afflicted? Like, which one is this pulling me more to in that situation? So in those areas, I work more individually with people, just kind of writing them and like proposing that question of like, okay, I hear what you're saying, but in light of this, how would you respond?
Yeah.
Not are you right or wrong, but how would you respond to this?
Yeah.
So I think there's that tension that you just have to walk through and you have to know your community. And as a pastor, right? Like our job is to poke and prod people and to tell them to grow up half the time, like to challenge them to see something they've never seen. That's our job. So if what you're doing is you're piling on either side of it, I don't see the point. I don't see the point. So as a church, I do approach it differently from our church's social media. But personally, I kind of go, does this make me a freedom fighter? Or does this make me an oppressor?
Yeah, I think it's really good to, and I found especially with social media, to do some things, say, you know, especially if somebody says something that's combative or like I could tell like you pulled back something, it's always helpful to like send them a reply and say, hey, by the way, I'm going to private message you and have some of those conversations, because that is the hard part with online is that it is, you don't get, I do online ministry and so many times emails and things get misinterpreted because I don't get to like inflect and get to show emotion. And generally, like you can just ask a question and it could cause all this problem. So I think having, especially thinking about who you're reaching and engaging one-on-one are probably very valuable. But, you know, there are times, especially if you're reaching certain generations, you need to have questions, you need to push, and sometimes you need to pull back. And so it's having that tension, and it determines where your ministry is. You know, if you're in Charlotte, I think as a pastor, you're having a different conversation. Because there's stuff going on there right now.
Sure.
And I
would even ask within that of like, are you surrounding yourself with people who are helping you engage with it with empathy, right? Like, are you intentional about surrounding yourself with multi-ethnic, multi-social, socioeconomic people that when something comes up and you can just be honest, like I tell people all the time, like, I don't get this. Will you teach me? And what I found is so much love and credit is earned in those situations where people go, dude, you're willing to be honest and get that you don't get what it's like to be Black in America.
Hmm.
You know, and you don't get what it's like to, you know, have a dad who is in the system. You don't get what it's like to not have both parents at home. And when you step into that with that humility of like, I don't get it. Would you be the teacher here?
Yeah.
And lead me in this? I see such an openness from people.
Well, I know for everybody's listening, we've talked about a couple different things, and don't be scared. You don't need to be scared. I think the big thing is you need to figure out who you're reaching if you haven't already. And you need to, especially if you're reaching people, the church shouldn't be this closed system. We know that that doesn't work where you hide away from issues. The Bible has answers or at least directions of the way to navigate some of these things. And I think it's important to be thinking about how you're website and your social accounts, how does it reach the community? What's the words you're using? What are the conversations? Are all your posters for Christians? I think you need to change it up. How are you presenting? Because if you're telling your community to reach people, but none of your stuff is really thinking about those in your community, I think that that's an issue with the mouth and what the hand is doing. And so, and create forums, you know, and I love that idea of meeting with people one-on-one and talking through things.
Yeah.
But
even part of that, Jay, is, I mean, to speak to that real quick, even part of that is you talk about like, is everything you're posting for Christians? Chances are if all you're doing is hanging out with Christians, that's all you're going to post about.
That's a good word, yeah.
Right? Like I hang out for one night a week in a bar.
Yeah.
And I write in the bar and I'll have a pint with whoever wants to have a pint with me. Nobody knows I'm a pastor, but I want to engage people on a level that they just be honest with it. So, cause then you really have an idea of like, if I showed him this post right now, would he be like, what the F is that about? Right. Or would he be like, dude, yeah, man. Like I get that.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's the balancing act. You got to feed your people stuff that they're going to love to eat.
Yeah.
You also got to challenge your people to think beyond where they're at, but you also need to be able to communicate with people who have no idea God loves them and would look you in the face if they knew your past and go, I hate you. I hate what you do. I think you're a scam artist. I want nothing to do with you. And the truth is I have a number of friends who that's how we started off.
Mm.
Tomorrow I'm going to get in coffee with a buddy of mine who is a former pastor. He came out of the closet. He decided to live a celibate life. The church he was in forced him to dating women. He eventually snapped, couldn't take it anymore. I don't blame him. I think the church did him a disservice in that. And now he wants nothing to do with it. He hates religion. He hates Christians.
Yeah.
He despises the idea of going to church, but he still wants to hang out with me. Because the first thing I did when I heard him, I just said, listen, man, I just know you know I love you. And I am so sorry for what the church did to you. And if I can listen to you and you want to yell at a Christian for it, I'm here. And it's amazing when you actually sit with people through that, how it changes it. So,
well, thanks for engaging. I know we could, you and I are friends, so we could talk forever. But so for everything else about what Brandon's doing, check out City Rising Church. You can find everything there in social accounts. So you can see what he's doing. I know that hopefully we will talk more because there's a bunch of stuff here that we can unpack. But for everybody else, go to socialmedia.church to check out more about the show, to see past episodes, and use the hashtag SMC Podcast. Thanks so much for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Social Media Church Podcast. To learn more about the host, the show, or suggest a future topic, check out socialmedia.church. If you liked what you heard, then take a couple minutes to leave a review on iTunes. Every review helps. Lastly, share the podcast with a friend and use the hashtag SMC Podcast to engage with the host. Thanks again for listening.